This is NHL Radio.
Time now for NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the NHL Hour. Gary Bettman, along with a special guest co-host. You got paid extra for this? EJ Raddick.
You don't want to know. No, I know. I don't want to know either. My family doesn't want to know. Nobody wants to know.
EJ from ESPN, the magazine, and from his continuous daily role with us.
Occasionally showing up on NHL Live.
There you go. And we're coming to you live from the NHL store, powered by Reebok on 6th Avenue and 47th Street in New York City. Call-in number is 1-877-645-6696. That's 1-877-645-6696. We'll take calls. We'll talk to legendary Chicago Blackhawk center Stan Mikita. I want to ask him about the use of his name in Wayne's World.
That's right.
Among
That's a,
other things.
A good question. I like that.
And you and I'll chat for a couple of minutes. How
That's
you doing?
Nice. I'm okay. How are you? It's a kind of good. A little blustery, cold day here, April day.
It's hockey weather.
It is hockey weather. Okay. It is hockey
we
weather.
We don't want it too hot yet.
That's right. We don't. Especially, you're right about that. It gets too hot. It gets bad in those buildings. But your thoughts as we go? We're in the middle of the first round here. Your watch, you're taking it all in. What do you think?
Are you interviewing me or am I interviewing
well, I'm
you?
I'm just asking you so you can give your thoughts to the listeners.
I think we're seeing some incredibly exciting hockey. Some series have obviously run a little short, but the teams that have won those series have really dominated, and I think are going to be very strong factors in the second round. And I think we have a couple of series that can go either way in the next 48 hours.
Yeah.
You know, just because you're down 3-1 or you're up 3-1 doesn't mean it's over.
That's true. Now, can I ask you this?
You can ask me anything.
All right. Last week.
Just you and I talking. Nobody's
okay,
listening.
Nobody's paying attention. Last week, when I was here with you, we talked about the fact that you were going to be in Columbus for
yes.
their first ever playoff game. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on what that experience was like.
It was very exciting to be there. It was great for the city of Columbus. It was great for the franchise. The media couldn't have been, the local media, more upbeat and supportive. The fans were out early. There was a line of people waiting to get into the pregame party at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was a cold, rainy, clammy day. But they have this this great plaza that they've built in the arena district in front of the arena. And this is, you know, this area didn't exist 10 years ago. I mean, what Nationwide and the Blue Jackets have done has been incredible in Columbus. And it was a real party festive atmosphere. The game, I'm not sure from the fan standpoint, actually fulfilled expectations. But that sometimes happens because you have a club that doesn't have in the Blue Jackets a tremendous amount of playoff experience.
Yeah.
And Detroit looked very, very strong. Notwithstanding the fact that it was really Detroit's game, they scored first in less than 2 minutes. The fact is the fans were supportive, excited, and I think they were happy to see what it's like to be in the second season, and I think the future of that franchise will only get bigger and better and stronger as a result of this experience.
Did you get to go to St. Louis as well?
I didn't make it to St. Louis because the way the schedule broke, They were playing the same time.
Yeah, because they looked like that crowd was revved up a lot in St. Louis.
You know, St. Louis, I think, is a great story because I think we talked about this a little bit last week. St. Louis was in last place on February 21st.
Wow.
Okay? And the fact that they came in and not only made the playoffs, they were, what, the sixth seed?
Yeah.
Right? That is absolutely phenomenal. And you know what? There's a certain irony in the way the series ended with a, you know, a last second goal. But I think the most important thing in terms of the franchise is it's clear that Dave Checketts and the people running that franchise, JD, on the hockey side, have really brought the franchise back. I mean, St. Louis had always been a hockey town, and then they went through one of those periods under prior ownership where the team didn't perform as well, fans got frustrated, and there was a little bit of lethargy or apathy with respect to the franchise. And now that the club really has gotten its credibility back. St. Louis is once again a hockey town, and I think that's great for the Blues and their fans. What are you signaling us?
Greg is signaling.
You know,
we're both sitting here looking at Greg, right?
Greg, it's like,
now you know how my day is all the time.
Are we playing charades? I mean, you sounds like what? What is it that you'd like, Greg?
Yes.
We've got...
You can be on the air. Go ahead.
A lot of calls.
Okay.
I'm pointing to the screen. That's okay. All I was doing, pointing to the screen. A lot of calls and
actually, you weren't pointing to the screen.
You were
gyrating. I was actually I thought we were going to have to restrain you again.
Yes, again. Again. That was ugly the last time, Gary. I don't know if you were here for that, Gary, but it wasn't pleasant. Gary, I have one thing I want to ask you before we go to the phone.
Just one thing.
Just one more thing.
One more thing.
And then I'll let the callers have their way with you.
Or with you.
Well, they might, but I think they're probably more interested in you. The Globe and Mail today, I happened to pick it up.
You know, that was on my list of things
reading,
to talk about.
I figured it might be. And, you know, I see a story that Bill Daly is up there meeting with a group that has an interest in perhaps having a second franchise in Toronto. Reading the story, it looks like out by where the Woodbine racetrack is. I guess it's by the airport out that way. Here's a chance for you, the commissioner of the National Hockey League, to comment on that story.
Well, thank you, EJ, for helping us break news. As I read these stories, they never cease to amaze me. It's like every time we sneeze, somebody feels compelled not only to write that we sneezed, but to turn it into pneumonia. Okay, the fact of the matter is, and I don't know if somebody's got an agenda or somebody's, you know, doing this for sport, but the fact of the matter is, and maybe Bill Daly and I are simply too accessible. When people want to come and talk to us about things, it's real easy to get us on the phone, to get an appointment. Bill happened to be in Toronto on other business, and some people asked if he would sit down and talk to them and hear what they had to say. We listen to what lots of people have to say. That's how you learn. But we couldn't be and have been more consistent on the notion that we're not planning on relocating. We're not planning on expanding. So anybody, anywhere who wants a franchise really is out of luck for the foreseeable future. And this notion, because Bill happened to sit down with some people, I didn't know who he was sitting down with. I could have cared less. He had the meeting. He reported back that, you know, yet there's another group interested in a second team in Southern Ontario, which actually doesn't come as a shock or a news bulletin to me. You know, if at some point we're in the business of relocating or expanding, we're going to open it up because the number of people in a number of places who want franchises is a fairly lengthy list. And nobody has the corner on the market. And frankly, to the extent that people have ideas, suggestions, thoughts, we like to listen. It's no more than that. And the fact that it could turn into the story of the magnitude that it's made into yet again.
Again, because we talked about this. I was up in your office talking to you about this, and I guess it was October or November.
I mean, it's the story that won't go away. You know what? Here's the newsflash. If we ever decide that we're actually going to consider a franchise anywhere that it isn't currently, I'll announce it. How's that for a concept? So let's stop the speculation because it's a waste of everybody's time and it really just gets things off on a track that nobody needs to have us on. You know, Bill and I spend the better part of the day answering phone calls. What are you doing? Can I get an application? I'd like a team there too. We're not doing anything. And I wish it would stop in terms of this, you know, to suggest that it's irresponsible speculation, that might be a little harsh because I don't know what's motivating these stories to begin with. You know, if I were a conspiratorialist, I might have a theory, but I'm not going there. So,
okay.
Did I answer your
question?
You were
very clear. As far as I could hear, you were very clear.
Well, okay.
You stated your case very well. I think it is always wise to listen to hear what people have to say. As you pointed out, you learn things that way. You never know what's going to happen in the future, but as of now, you made it clear that we are where we are.
Do you think maybe Bill and I are too easy? We just take meetings with anybody and everybody?
Well, you have met with me on occasion, and that would indicate that you are too easy.
Apparently so.
Yeah, but Hey, listen, I think you made it very clear. I think you have to always listen to people and see what they're saying. This is it's a big business, and you want to know what's out there. But, again, you make it clear in your answer that nothing new is going forward. So away we go.
Away we go. Should we go to the phones?
Let's go to the phones.
I think that's a wonderful concept, and that would take us to Steve in California. You're on with EJ and Gary, and we're happy to take your call. And if you ask me about a second team in Ontario, I'm just kidding. Go ahead. I'm just kidding.
Can you hear me?
Yes, of course we can.
Thank you very much. Question, I'd like to be one of those criers about refereeing, but do you believe that some of the referees favor other teams?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know what? When the guys go out there, this business about favoring a team or favoring or picking on a player, it's happening too fast out there. These guys are looking and reacting, and they don't have enough time to think about, well, it's this player, and I really like him, or I don't like him, or it's this team. If you're a good official, you're in position, you're watching, and you're reacting to what you see instantaneously. They have an impossible job. And, you know, the thing that I always say is the best judge of our officiating tends to be, for better or for worse, managers and coaches who have been recently fired. because invariably, as they're watching the game, they will say to us, unsolicited, gee, you know, when you don't have a rooting interest, it's amazing how good the officiating is.
Yeah.
And you know what? Teams aren't favored. Players aren't favored. Teams aren't picked on. And players aren't picked on. And as much as people would think they are or speculate they are, or even as much as coaches and clubs and players will make their case, I think when you hear that, it's more about guys trying to get an edge and game the system. It doesn't work. And we actually said that at our pre-playoff conference call. We have a conference call before each round with the coach and general manager of all the teams. We do everybody together. And we said, cut it out. The officials are completely oblivious to all of this gamesmanship. Doesn't serve any purpose. And I think it kind of misleads our fans a little bit. But the great thing about sports is passion, rooting, and the bias it gives you as a fan.
Yes. We hear it every day when we do the NHL Live program, Gary. I go through it with... And fans, you're right. They're absolutely right. They're passionate, and they're so revved up about their teams, and that's the good news. But the bad news is sometimes, I mean, like you made it, you stated it really nicely there. The game is going so fast. I mean, these guys, it's a tough job. You said an impossible job. I would tend to agree with that. I've done it a couple times. I don't ever want to do it again. And I give them credit. They don't catch everything. Not everything is perfect, but that's the nature of how it is, and they're certainly not trying to favor anyone.
Well, and what's interesting is this is a game of human beings and mistakes. Coaches are making split-second decisions. Lord knows the players are making split-second decisions, and there are lots and lots of mistakes that get made. And I make this point all the time when we get these calls, we hold the officials accountable. They're constantly being watched, observed, supervised. We have a supervisor at every series who's monitoring what's going on and really coaching the officials to make sure that they're doing the right thing, and the right thing being just calling the game, enforcing the rules the way they were intended to be enforced. And I hope our fans understand that if our game stands for integrity, if anything, it stands for integrity. And we know that, you know, everybody else, when you're not at ice level and you're not skating around, the game is actually happening a little bit slower for you. You know, it's not a coincidence that the hockey people at the club level and our supervisors are sitting up high, because when you're up at that level, the game becomes a whole lot more analytical. It's a little less of the real-time sensation you get as if you're sitting on the glass.
Absolutely. When I go to – most of the time the press boxes are upstairs now, Gary. Yeah. I like to get down low once in a while just to remind myself of the speed of the game and how fast things are happening. And, again, they're looking sometimes looking through guys to try to see things. So tough. It is a very tough job.
And they don't have the benefit of replay.
Yeah.
And the multiple angles that you get. And the fact that when you consider all the technology that's now involved in covering the game, particularly for television, the amount that they're getting it right, both calls and non-calls, is actually incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the Brodeur play the other day, just to complete kind of this conversation, I mean, that happened really fast, and I thought, based on the rule, that was the right call the referee made there. I mean, there was a little bit of incidental contact. Brodeur was outside the crease, and there's a difference between contact outside the crease and inside the crease. I thought the guy did, the referee in that situation did a great job and got it right. That's just my opinion.
I will not disagree with you on that. I completely agree. No. You know what? Marty is passionate.
Yeah.
And so I respect his view. But the fact of the matter is he was in it. It was a tough way to lose the game. But at the end of the day, we think the officials made the right call. And, you know, reasonable people are always going to differ. But the people who were charged with making those calls were completely comfortable that it was done the absolute right way. Speaking of right way, let's talk to Jeremy in Pittsburgh. You're on with EJ and Gary. This is XM Sirius 204-208.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're okay. What about you?
I'm doing good. I had a quick question. I was at the Flyer-Penguin game on Tuesday, and I was wondering because, I mean, you know, the whole thing about Philly fans, you know, it's a tough environment, tough place to be at. And I'm actually a Penguin fan. My son, who is 6 years old, unfortunately, is a Flyers fan. And so I took him out to the game. And, yeah, I drove all that way. I paid all that money for the tickets and that. But I tell you what, it is definitely not a family environment. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, there was fights in the bathroom. I mean, it was just, it was horrible. And, you know, I'll never take my son back there again. But my question was, as far as, you know, is it totally up to the team as far as the enforcement of things there? Or does NHL have any involvement in the policing to make sure that, you know, every fan gets the same kind of, you know, view of the ice and relaxing environment?
Well, we have minimum standards in terms of how buildings need to be staffed from a security standpoint. And obviously, we don't want any situations where people are uncomfortable. But just as obviously, we don't have people in every restroom in every arena supervising what goes on. I suppose in any public event where there are thousands of people gathering, you can have an unfortunate situation, unfortunate incident. But overwhelmingly, I think the fan experience at our rinks is overwhelmingly positive. You know, it's funny you should say to me you didn't find it a family environment. I remember when we did the Winter Classic in Buffalo, the security people telling us at Ralph Wilson Stadium that they couldn't believe how family-friendly our game was and our fans were. And so I think perhaps you just caught a bad situation on a bad night, which is not indicative of the typical NHL experience. But if you are, you know, still concerned and unhappy, I would suggest sending a letter to the Flyers and telling them how you felt and what it was. Every organization, particularly one that's in the business of serving and entertaining customers, fans, can always get better by getting input from the people that are there. But I think, and I've been to Wachovia Center a number of times. Countless times, and I always find it to be an energizing, exciting experience. The fans are very passionate, and I'm sorry you didn't and your son didn't have as good of experiences as you might have hoped for. I would give him another try.
I would agree with that. I mean, I've been to different sporting events, you know. Go to a Jet game sometime.
Well, I'm not loving it. See, I went out of my way
anything
else.
I don't have to do that, unfortunately. Sure.
Well,
but I would just say this.
No,
think,
but you,
think,
whoa. You're here with me.
Yes.
So, I mean, we you know,
okay.
you've got to, you know,
okay.
you got to clean up your act
okay.
a little bit,
well,
you know? We got to.
Well, I would just say this. I would just say this, that, you know, you go. We had a caller today, Gary, from Boston, talking about the Boston-Canadian series, and one caller said I had a tough time there. Another guy said, no, it was great there. I think sometimes you end up in situations where you might be near some people that, you know, are having a little bit, you know, a little too much fun. So
you
that
know,
happens.
It happens, and sometimes it's the luck of the draw. It's like, you know, people ride the subway in New York, and some people think it's great, and other people are horrified. You know, so much in life is serendipity. And, you know, you have a bad experience. And, you know, I've probably been in, and Frank Brown will correct me if I'm wrong on this, 25 of our rinks out of the 30 this season. Mm-hmm. And overwhelming, you know, and listen, I'm pretty visible and I sit in the stands
That's
most
right,
of the
yep.
time. And overwhelmingly, I find our fans and the fan experience and the way I get treated terrific.
Yeah.
So, you know, unfortunately for this caller, it was an atypical experience.
Yeah.
I am told that it's time for us to take a break.
Okay.
Time goes so quickly when you're here.
Yes.
So I'd like our callers to stay on hold. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. But when we come back, we'll first be joined by Hall of Famer Stan Mikita. It's all coming up next on the NHL Hour.
This is Patrick Kane of the Chicago Blackhawks, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back to the NHL Hour. Gary Bettman along with EJ Raddick, and we'll get back to your call soon. But first, we have a special guest on the line. One of the true legends of our game, Mr. Stan Mikita, played 22 seasons from 58-59 to 79-80. Almost 1,400 games in the playoffs, 155 games, and won the Art Ross four times in five seasons, Stanley Cup champion in 60-61, Hart Trophy winner in 67 and 68, Lady Byng in 67 and 68, first team All-Star six times, and the Lester Patrick Award. Stan Mikita, how are you?
I'm out of breath listening to all that stuff. Where'd you get all that, Mr. Bettman?
You know, first of all, it's Gary. You know that. And secondly, Frank Brown and the others here, you know, not that I needed much background on you, because I'm going to ask you a bizarre question before we get started, but everybody knows what a great player you are in this game. So how did you get mixed up with the Wayne's World movie?
Well, it was easy. They needed somebody who had never been in the movies before, although I think I was years ago. Now, they called me. I think it was because Tim Hortons Donuts was up in Canada, where Mike Myers grew up.
Yep.
And unfortunately, they said, most of our audience is going to be in the United States. So they said, let's look for someplace, Aurora is the name of the town, in the United States somewhere. So I think just looking up myself as to where some of these places might have been, there's almost every state almost has one Aurora in it. So they had mentioned, well, there's one outside of Chicago, but 50 miles. Great. Call Mikita and see if he'd be interested in this. Instead of Tim Horton Donuts, it became Stan Mikita Donuts.
Did you ever think of opening your own chain of donuts?
You know what? I did it one time, but I really didn't want to work that hard.
So
I decided that we'll let somebody who knows a lot more about that business do it.
You know, talking about working hard, when you first came into the league, you weren't known for scoring goals or making assists. You were known for penalty minutes. How did your career and your role as a player evolve?
Well, there was one reason why I succeeded, and it took me a long time. But, you know, if you'd have been around then, I could have been under the influence of you and the people that actually set the new rules. Because about two or three years ago, you came out with a penalty. There was about three of them for slapping the sticks and slapping the guys in the hands and so on. And I was very proficient at doing that with the opposition. What had happened was that you got tested constantly because there was only six teams. There was only 17 players to a team. So jobs were pretty scarce. But we were tested every day as far as the opposition was concerned. They wanted to see what you were made of. And if you didn't fight back, you were almost run out of the league. So when the new rule came along, I see more players built like I am or was, you know, in the mid 160 pounds somewhere in there, and 5'10". Nowadays, really considered a small person as far as hockey's concerned, because you've got guys that are 260 playing. So I was very fortunate. I had some injuries, but nothing really serious that would keep me out. And you know, I'm starting to feel it now in my old age. But during the time that I played, I was pretty decent shape. So
you
thank you, thank you for bringing the little guy back.
Yeah, you know what? As a little guy, I understand. But you went from being heavily penalized early on, and then you won the Lady Bing twice. How do you explain that gentlemanly conduct in light of what you just described as your beginnings in the game?
Well, it must have been with mirrors. If we have time, I've got a quick story. Our daughter, Meg, was, I think, 5 or 6 at the time, and we came home from New York the next morning after we played a game there, and the game was televised on WGN here. With Lloyd Pettit, I think we can all remember him. Anyway, as I got to the door about 10 o'clock in the morning, she came running. I was, oh, Daddy, Daddy. She said, Mommy, let me stay up and watch the first period of your game last night. And she said, you were so wonderful. I said, well, thank you very much. But, you know, why do you say that? She said, well, you know, you kept getting your name called out there and so on. But she said, there's one thing I didn't quite understand. Why was it that... you and or Uncle Bobby, meaning Bobby Hull, Uncle Ab McDonald, and Uncle Kenny Warham, and so on. She said, when that guy with the stripes blew the whistle, they all went over and sat with all their friends. And when he pointed at you, and he made you go all the way across the ice and sit by yourself. You know, why was that? And that kind of came out and hit me as to what I was doing. So what I did was I came out to myself and just said, play under the rules and keep your mouth shut with the referees, and do a little more hard work, like skating instead of hooking and holding, and instead of slapping the guys in the hands and so on. So I did that, and lo and behold, the first year I had, I think, 2 penalties, so 4 minutes of penalties after being up to 160 minutes, I think it was.
That's incredible.
And that was basically the start of it.
That's incredible. In 66-67, you had a hat trick in the sense that you won the Art Ross Trophy as the leading scorer, 35 goals, 97 total points. You won the Hart Trophy as MVP, and you won the Lady Bing. Talk about what you remember about that season.
You know, not really too much, because I had a promise which I made to myself. Don't think of the bad games that happened, and you know, look forward to the next one. And I have a lot of memories, but to tell you right off the bat over the telephone, I can't think of any that would be interesting to you or anybody else. But I was fortunate to have the teammates that I had, and I mentioned Bobby Hull and guys like Glenn Hall in the Nets. He kept me in the league for quite a while by making the right plays when I goofed up, and it was fun, and we enjoyed it. We had a lot of fun out of it.
Talk about your relationship with Bobby Hull. It's been widely reported historically that you and he had a special relationship.
Well, I think we did as much as athletes can have together. We met, I think I was 15 years old in St. Catharines, Ontario, in high school, and Bobby was a year and 4 months older or something like that. Anyway, we played on the same football team in high school, and then you know, we practiced every day for the junior thing, and I wasn't sure if I was going to make the team or not, but Bobby was there, and he kind of, he did the same thing for me when we came into the National Hockey League. He kind of took me under his arm and said, "Hey, Stanley, if you need some help, I'm right here to help you if you'd like." And I said, "Well, thank you, Bobby." And we became friends, and we've stayed friends ever since. And as a matter of fact, Bobby's kind of retired now down to Florida, and I just talked to him the other day, and he sends his best to everybody.
That's great. Do you see a little of yourself and Bobby in Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews?
Well, I think Jonathan and Patrick maybe have a little more speed than I ever dreamt of. But, you know, Bobby Hull was quite fast on his skates and, of course, with his slap shot. And these young men, they enjoy taking the puck on their own and keeping control of it instead of shooting it in the ice, which I think everybody was tired of. So, and I'll tell you, what I've been watching so far, not only of these two guys in the Blackhawks, but the league itself, the players, you got some great, great players out there. And it's turning into a hell of a series throughout the league.
We're talking to Stan Mikita. Stan, talk a little bit about what it's like to be a Chicago Blackhawk and playing hockey at the NHL level in Chicago, and talk a little bit about the revitalization of these Blackhawks and the way the fans have come back.
Well, it's amazing what Bobby and I both used to hear things after we retired. We've been out 20, 25, 30 years, and all of a sudden you'd go downtown for dinner or whatever, and you'd leave your car with the doorman, and the guy said, "Hey, aren't you that Mikita guy?" I said, "Well, yes, sir." "Ain't you? God, is that Bobby Hull?" "Yeah." He said, "Well, we used to watch you guys. I had season tickets and so on." And he said, "Well, when Bobby left and you guys, you were kind of retired, he said, we kind of left the scene because, you know, it just wasn't fun anymore for us." And that was the first thing that Bobby said to me. He said, "Stanley, go out there and have some fun with this game." And we all know Bobby had a hell of a lot of fun because he scored a lot of goals. But it was amazing how Rocky Wirtz came along after his father passed away and decided, let's bring those people back. And he hired John McDonough from the Cubs. And, you know, John would be a genius because usually the Cubs had last place since by July 4th, I think. And John came out and made money for the team. It was unbelievable. And they must have the greatest setup in the world as far as attendance because they kept leading the league in attendance and ending up in last place. So along with them, Dale Talon made some great picks with the players. And Joel McClendon came in and looks like he's doing a hell of a job with the coaching.
Have you been following the Calgary Blackhawks series closely? And if so, break it down for us.
I have been watching it. I wasn't too thrilled last night about the outcome, but what was nice to see is, yes, they can come back from a deficit of three goals, and unfortunately they didn't get that fourth one where they could have beat them after the comeback. But that's why they make the series 4 out of 7. Now it's 2 out of 3. And I like what I'm seeing. I think the goaltending is come along, and Hobby Boulin has turned the corner. When at one time nobody wanted him, and he said, "Yes, I'd like to stay in Chicago," and he's really working and making fun again of the game. And the new players, a lot, you know, most of them have not been in the playoffs, so I can see a little bit of shakiness there. But that's all right. They're still young. They'll remember, and let's hope they get something out of it.
Hey, Stan, during the Winter Classic, that week there, it seemed like, you know, Bobby Hull and you were around a lot of times. Talk a little bit, or just let us know, listeners know, how much you enjoyed that and what that was like for you, because that was a special time in Wrigley Field. What a great place, and it was a great event that took place there. What was that week like for you?
Well, my memories went back to when I was a teenage kid and before I got into junior hockey and just kind of playing on teams around the St. Catharines area. And when we had the time, we would go to the local rivers when they were frozen, and when we'd skate up and down these rivers. It was, so my memories of that, it was unbelievable. And when they said you guys can actually go out there on the ice in the middle of winter on New Year's Day and skate before these guys get on the ice, it was wonderful. And I think the people enjoyed the festivities and the way it was presented. And I know Mr. Bettman, you had a lot to do with that, and then the city of Chicago and I as part of it, I'd like to thank you for allowing us to have that in our midst here, and maybe one day we'll get it back. I don't know, but everybody I've talked to, they've enjoyed that, so let's hope we can get it again.
Well, we're glad you could be a part of it. One more question, then I'll let you go. Most people, younger people, don't know that you've been given credit for developing the banana blade curved stick that became so popular. Is there a story behind that?
Well, as all good things that come out at the end, you know, good inventions, they're all made out by mistake, and this was one of them. This was by accident. Very quickly, I got hit into the boards one day at practice during our scrimmage. My stick went into the boards where the gate opens up, and somebody was just closing it, and my stick got caught in there. And as I was going by, the guy pushed me a little further, and I could hear a crack. Now, I don't know if it was my rib cracking or what the heck it was, but anyway, I went to pull my stick out, and I couldn't because now it was jammed in there. So somebody opened the gate, and they said, "Here, Stanley, let's see if you can get it out now." So I did, and because of the lamination of the blade, the blade of the stick itself cracked on the back end, which would be my backhand side, and the stick was still in pretty good shape as far as using it. But I knew it was going to crack very shortly, and the old Chicago Stadium, the dressing room was way down, 21 stairs, by the way, it was down to the rink. And then I had to walk 21 back up again during the end of this practice, and I got a little upset, so I shot some pucks against the boards in being a little hot that I had to go through all this. And I heard the different sound, and I looked at it, and it felt like a different velocity on the puck. So I stayed out and whacked a few more shots and broke the stick and then forgot about it until after I showered and I came back out. I said, "Let me see if I can really bend one and try it and practice and see what happens." Well, the rest is history. Bobby came along and I had to make him one, and he kind of made it famous, but apparently I've been accused of inventing it. So I apologize to the little kids because I still think the kids should learn both the forehand and backhand, but it's tough to do with a curved stick.
Thank you, Stan, for being with us. Not only were you a great player on the ice, you've always been and are the consummate ambassador for our game off the ice, and it's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Mr. Bettman. Always nice to talk to you. And EJ, nice talking to you, sir.
All right. Thanks, Stan.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll return in a couple of minutes, and we'll go right to your calls. So hang on. This is the NHL Hour.
Hi, this is Henrik Lundqvist of the New York Rangers, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back to the NHL Hour. Gary Bettman with EJ Raddick. Mr. Lundqvist had quite a night last night.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. He's stealing the show in that series, and I guess we'll see what happens on Friday when they go to Washington. Rangers have a chance to pull off the big upset.
That's why we love playing the games.
I know. That's the funniest thing about it is people always ask me in my business, you know, who's going to win. And I say, hey, it's really the ultimate reality show. That's why people are drawn to it and people go to the games and they follow it so rapidly you just never know what's going to happen. And the Rangers have been a real good example of that, a terrific surprise so far in the early part of the playoffs.
Do you ever make predictions?
I make predictions all the time, and it's not my favorite part of things. And I always people will call me on a day of a game, and they'll ask me literally, like, who's going to win tonight? And I know they do it as part of conversation, but I always say, listen, if I really knew who was going to win, do you think I'd be, you know, sitting here? I'd be trying to take advantage of that knowledge in some way.
See, I get asked too all the time.
Yeah, but you do know who's going to win.
No. See, that's that. No. And that's the point, because I never make predictions because. If
well,
they
can.
Came true,
exactly.
People would say, well, of course.
Gary Bettman, he's like 85% on these games.
Yeah, right.
It's amazing. How does he do it?
Exactly. Hey, speaking while we gave Mr. Lundqvist a shout-out,
yes.
I have to give Scott Greenstein, who is the president and chief content officer of SiriusXM,
okay.
a bit of a shout-out because he gave me one of the all-time great presents.
Okay.
Because as I think our listeners know, I have an affinity for classic rock. I listen to... Sirius 14 and XM 46 all the time,
okay.
which is the early stage. And they had we had talked about this, done a weekend where they were playing the 33, remember 33 and a third for LPs.
That's right.
The 33 most influential records, albums of that era. And I had asked for a copy of the list. Not only did I get the list, Scott sent me an iPod downloaded with all 33 albums.
Wow. That is a nice. You better give him a big shout out.
You know, I mean.
That's a nice gift.
It's also a good plug for the great content other than the 24/7 channel they're nice enough to have for the NHL. For their musical content.
You know, you're lucky here, Gary. You have a lot of good music. The 2 weeks I've been here, in and out of breaks, it's fun to hear that. It energizes you a little bit, and I know that when we do the NHL Live Show, because we're simulcast, we have limitations of what kind of music we can play. But I like being here. I like getting a little of the rock and roll. I'm liking that.
You know, we get, you know, there are certain prerogatives I get. For example, you probably aren't aware of this. We take one less break during the hour than you do.
Okay.
And I said we were taking too many breaks, and the response was, well, that's our format. And I said, well, I can do something else for that hour.
Yeah.
And they changed the format.
That's
all it took. It was really easy.
Well, you know. Greg. I don't think it'll work with me.
And, you know, we're on different compensation packages for being on the
air. Very, very much so.
I understand. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give the call-in number one more time.
Yes.
And then we're going right to the calls for the balance. Okay? Call-in number is 1-877-645-6696. Isn't that NHL on XM? I think that's what that stands for.
Yes,
you know?
It is.
Quite an acronym. Okay, let's go to the callers. And we have Harold from Long Island, who has been holding for 42 minutes. I apologize, and I'm happy to get to you. You're on XM Sirius.
Well, hello, guys. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
First off, I wanted to say, Gary, you've done a wonderful job.
Thank you.
And I would like to say that I'm a lifetime Islander fan and a real passionate one at that. And there's a lot of us out there. You know, there's a lot of speculation around in the NHL. Not from you. You kind of answered my question earlier when you said the NHL is not looking to relocate. And I'm glad to hear that. But my question is, can the NHL do anything to help Charles Wong, who owns the Islanders, do something with the arena so that the team does not move?
You're asking the right question on behalf of Islander fans everywhere. And the good news for the Islanders is that Charles Wong does own the franchise. He has been incredibly invested in the Islanders, both emotionally and financially. If it weren't for him, the Islanders might not exist in any form. And he is absolutely committed to trying to do everything possible to get the Lighthouse Project moving forward. If that doesn't work, he's going to have to look at his options. Doesn't necessarily mean his options off of Long Island, but he's going to have to look at his options because the Islanders cannot stay in the Nassau Coliseum 1 minute longer than they're required to under their lease. That building is antiquated. Everybody knows it. It impacts attendance. It impacts team performance. It impacts the experience that fans have when they go to the game. You know, enough is enough. This is a gentleman who's committed hundreds of millions of dollars to this franchise, is prepared to commit even more for the Lighthouse Project, which would include a new or renovated arena. It's time for Nassau County and the town of Hempstead to give him the approvals so that he can move forward. You know, I hear speculation, and we talked earlier in the show about speculation on things like this, speculation that, well, the economy's bad, blah, blah, blah. Let him get the approvals he needs so that he can get this project done. He will get it done, but it's time for the governmental authorities to stop being an impediment to what must happen inevitably, because if anybody thinks that in the absence of a new arena, this team is going to stay in the Nassau Coliseum, they must be nuts. Is that clear enough?
That's pretty clear. You're clear today, Gary.
You know, some days I'm clearer than others.
I like being in here. No, you're clear most of the time.
Alex in New York, you've been on for over 40 minutes as well. You're on XM Sirius with EJ and Gary.
Hi. I'm also a New York fan, but on the other side, I'm a Ranger fan. And being a Ranger fan, I love Sean Avery. But last night, he kind of got a little bit out of control. I want to know how you feel about his antics playing in the playoffs and during the regular season.
You know, it's interesting you should ask me that question. I really have no opinion. I only form an opinion if a line gets crossed by Sean or any player. Once we did what we had to do with Sean a few months back, and he took care of business, and he came back, and the Rangers brought him back, he's like every other player. And the notion that somehow he's a victim of officials or anything else, that's hogwash. The fact of the matter is, when you play a certain style, you're more apt to cross the line more frequently and get called for penalties. That's just the fact of life. And I think the officials have been doing a fair and consistent job. And in the space of a few seconds, you know, a player may do something, regret it, think he wasn't appropriately penalized. But I think the officials have been doing a very good job in the Washington Rangers series. And to the extent that Sean or any player is getting penalized, he probably deserves it. And I think it's that simple. And I know that because I was in Madison Square Garden on Monday night, there are a lot of people in the building who might feel differently. But that's the beauty of the passion that our game evokes and the way our fans connect. But if you're looking at it objectively, the players who are getting penalized are virtually all the time deserving of the penalties that are getting called on them. You have a different
Amen.
View on that?
Amen. I feel the same way, Gary. I mean, we get calls all the time, and I just think the teams that win at the end of the day are teams that battle through these things. They overcome whatever obstacles are in their way. They kill the penalties that they get. They take advantage of opportunities when they come their way. And they move forward, and they keep their eye on the focus,
well,
on the ball,
and to add on the puck. And they add one thing to that: the teams that, and I'm not picking on any team now. Mm-hmm. As a general matter, over time, a team that complains and looks for excuses and blame, those teams typically don't win.
Yeah,
you know, it's the team, as you said, that stays focused. You know, adversity comes, you deal with it, and you move on. That's how you win.
Yeah, I thought Brent Sutter. I brought it up earlier today. Brent Sutter, in the coach of the Devils, a guy who's won a Stanley Cup as a player. I thought he handled the end of the game situation, the press conference with after the Brodeur incident, really so well, because he was on focus. He said, "Listen, we had some, you know, it was a tough call. Life goes on. We're ready, getting ready for Game 5, and I think that will help New Jersey move forward."
You know, it's interesting. Stan Mikita was telling the story about his daughter watching him on TV. There was an article in one of the local papers talking about Marty having a conversation with his daughter the next morning,
really
asking about what had happened, and she wouldn't talk about it, and he basically said he got the message that what he did kind of made her feel uncomfortable watching it.
Interesting.
But, you know, but that was pretty out of character for him.
Yeah, very out of character. And it was, you know, it was one of those things. I mean, how many games are decided with 0.2 seconds on the clock? I don't think that's the first time in playoffs, right?
And thank goodness for instant.
In regulation time, yeah.
Thank goodness for instant replay.
That's right.
There was no, while there may have been an issue about goaltender interference or not, there was no issue about the puck crossing the line before time elapsed.
Exactly. In Stan Mikita's day, with that old clock in Chicago Stadium, who knows what we would be talking about.
Exactly right. And while we're talking about the Blackhawks, I think Nathan from Ohio has something he'd like to talk about. So, Nathan, you're on with EJ and Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. And EJ, at the end of Game 3 in the Chicago-Calgary series, there was, Chicago was shorthanded, and there was a bit of a scrum over by the Calgary bench. At one point, the announcer on Versus said something along the lines of that there were only 3 Hawks on the ice and 6 Flames, not counting the goalie. I didn't hear any follow-up to that, but if my math is right, that would mean someone left the bench. Was it a shift change, or did the league ever look into that at all?
You know, you're the first one who's raised it to me, and I cannot answer the question, but I'm going to look into it. I don't have a recollection. Do you, EJ?
Yeah, no, I don't, but I will say, in defense of the hockey ops guys, I mean, I know up in Toronto, Coley Campbell, Mike Murphy, and all the guys up there, they're monitoring all that stuff. We're in the playoffs now, so, I mean, it's not like there's 45 games on the schedule. And that game that night was the last game of the evening, so everybody's got their eyes on it. I'm sure if there was anything that was out of character, out of line, there would have been an issue. That would have been in the report from the referees. And so I think that really that might have just been a misstatement by the broadcasters that night.
Broadcasters versus or the regionals or NBC, they're generally pretty good. Occasionally they get it wrong. But I agree with you. If there was an issue, particularly a player coming on the ice for a scrum, it would have been dealt with. And as I mentioned before, we have a series manager on site for every series. So things like that generally don't go undetected or unremedied. So my guess is there's something more to the story, or less to the story.
Less to the story in this
exactly.
case.
Why don't we go to Gail in California? You're on with EJ and Gary.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have been a Sharks season tickets holder for a number of years, and when I went to game two of the playoffs, I instead of just being able to buy the insert, I had to buy the whole program. I was told that it's an NHL rule, so could you tell me about that, please?
That's not a rule that's coming to mind. I'm not sure that...
You're not on top of that one, Gary?
I'm not sure that I'm familiar with rules, if we have any, with respect to game programs. I think that's typically a club decision as to what program they put out. My guess is they probably put out a new program for the playoffs as opposed to an insert, theory being a second season. I'm not aware of... rules that we have in that regard.
Yes.
Although I'm sure that somebody on my staff will tell me about it if there is. And if there is a rule, I will acknowledge it next week when we're on the air. Next Thursday when we're on the air. How about Peter in Saskatchewan? You're on with EJ and Gary.
How are you guys doing today?
We're good. How
Very
about
well.
You?
Well, good. I just got XM a while back, and you're right to give them kudos. This is fabulous. I paddle around in my bucket listening to you guys talk, and it's great. Very enjoyable. And you guys are doing a good job, by the way.
Thank you, and thanks for listening in.
The quick questions that I have is I'm a big Boston fan. We just got back from there, and I have actually a couple of guys that I know out there, and so we had a fabulous time. But the Boston feed on NHL center ice, I get that and have gotten that for years and really enjoy it. But they cut off at the end of the game. You don't get the after show. And the other thing is, love to get the Boston feed rather than CBC or Versus, which I enjoy. Don't get me wrong. But, it's hard to beat Jack Edwards screaming when the Bruins are scoring.
Or sometimes it's hard to beat it when he's complaining about a penalty against the Bruins. Though,
yes.
I've noticed both. Our games in Canada during the playoffs that are CBC, TSN, and RDS games are all national. Who do you get your center ice package, Bell? From Bell?
I actually had it through Bell.
Okay, but what happens is, and DirecTV, for example, carries all the feeds. The local feeds, both high def and standard def, for the home and away team. If you don't think Bell, and it's a question of capacity, is carrying enough of the feeds, you need to give them the feedback saying you want them to pick up more of the feeds. But at the end of the day, it turns out to be a question of how much capacity there is and how much is available in other places at the same time through the national packages. But we are distributing more games in more places than ever before, not only on the Center Ice package, but on Game Center Live on NHL.com. That's all we have time for today. Thanks for joining us. This has been the NHL Hour. Thank you, EJ, for being here. Coming up next is In the Slot with Mike Ross and Phil Esposito. We will be back next Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Until then, enjoy the playoffs.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com. This is NHL Radio.